I just made it up, actually. So, anyway. But while writing this book, a lot of my ideas came to me at all sorts of crazy times, out at dinner, in the middle of the night, even while hanging upside down on a Pilates machine. I never knew when a brilliant idea was going to hit me because my brain is working 26/7. Since I wanted to be prepared at all times, for the past year I kept a pen and paper on my person. Don't worry about the specifics of where or how. And every time I had a great idea, I would write it down so I wouldn't forget it. Here's an idea that came to me while I was hanging upside down on my Pilates machine eating dinner in the middle of the night. I think it will prove to you that genius can strike at any moment of the day. Do you ever notice how people... Okay, hang on. I can't make that word out. I think it says smile. Does it say smile? No, maybe it says simile. Why would I write down simile? I don't even use that word in my daily life. Why would I write it down? Is that a Q? That's a G. Is that a G? I don't know what that says. Does that say monkey? I don't remember thinking about monkeys. I remember thinking about pineapple, but that does not look like pineapple. Actually, it kind of looks like a pineapple, just doesn't look like the word pineapple. Maybe it says Greenland. I was thinking about Greenland, or was it Iceland? Where does Bjork not live? Is this even my handwriting? Who wrote this? Is that blood? No, blood isn't light blue. It's definitely ink. What is that word? Astronaut milkshake. I'm sorry, maybe I should not have read this chapter. Chapter 36. For the Teenagers. Now, listeners, we've come to two chapters that really only make sense if you read them on the page. They're both about the abbreviations teenagers use when they're texting their friends. It won't make any sense if I read it, so if you don't mind, I'm going to use this opportunity to take a short break. I have not had an apple in a while. It is delicious. No wonder horses like these things. Wow, they're good. Good for you, too. Why don't I eat apples more? Apple a day, they say. Okay, I'm going to leave the room now. Chapter 37. Haiku. Haiku sounds like I'm saying hi to someone named Ku. Hi, Ku. Hello. Chapter 38. Deep Thinkers and Not So Deep Thinkers. You're probably familiar with the famous sculpture of the Thinker. It's a man sitting down with his head resting on his hand, and it was created by a French artist named Rodin in 1902. It represents a person deep in thought, contemplating the struggles and the heaviness of the world around him. I recently saw a replica of it in the garden department of Sears, and it got me thinking. There are obviously all different sorts of people in this world. That's what makes the world go round. Well, that and wind. But when I saw the Thinker, I started to really think about thinking. And I thought about this. There are two distinct types of people in the world, deep thinkers and not so deep thinkers. Deep thinkers are people who ask a lot of questions, who are conscious about their actions, who seek reasons and explanations for everything they do and see and hear. Not so deep thinkers are people who litter. They're less aware of their impact on the planet. I mean, what year are you living in if you think you can still roll down your car window and toss garbage into the street? Maybe that was super awesome in 1968, but we can't do that anymore. It's not cool, man. We all need to be deeper thinkers. We need to think more about our actions and their consequences. There's a law of physics that says for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Do you know what that means? Me neither. Actually, it might have been in my fortune cookie last night. My point is, we need to think about what we are doing on and to this planet. We only have one Earth, and it's the most important planet in our entire solar system, besides Uranus. The more we consciously think about what we're doing and what we're consuming, the better off we're going to be. And I don't just mean what we eat. I mean what we buy and what we use. We consume so much. We buy the latest computers and phones and TVs and clothing, and that means everything that came before it ends up in landfills and oceans. I know that that's not a particularly hilarious sentiment, but it's something we need to think about as humans. And if you're an alien living on this Earth, you should be thinking about it as well. Everyone should think about it, not just the people who get labeled hippies or tree huggers because they care about our environment. I care, and I'm not a hippie. I did hug a tree one time, but it was the 70s, and I thought the tree was my friend Judy. There's plenty we can do to help. First of all, if you're not recycling, I don't even know what to do with you right now. I hate to have to scream at you through this audiobook, but please recycle. Secondly, there is a very easy way to save water. Take group showers. It's fun. It's friendly. At first, my housekeepers were resistant to this idea, but luckily my landscaper talked them into it. Another thing you can do is take reusable bags to the grocery store. Now, I always thought a reusable bag that you bring into a store was called a purse, and from what I understand, putting things in your purse while you're shopping is called shoplifting. So, shoplift. Want to save electricity? Unplug your appliances when you're not using them. Every Sunday, I unplug my tanning beds and dim the lights in my discotheque. You might want to unplug your television for a few hours a day. Not while my show is on, of course, but any other time. Well, not if it's Shark Week, because that's fascinating programming, but any other time. Unless The Bachelor is on, because people are going to be talking about it at work the next day. And if So You Think You Can Dance is on, you got to watch that. You know what? Never mind. Don't unplug the TV. Get rid of your refrigerator or something. I don't know. You'll figure it out. We all know people who go through life without ever thinking about their actions. They're the people who don't use turn signals and choose not to replace the empty roll of toilet paper after they finish it. They're not malicious in their intentions, usually. They just aren't paying attention. Let's try and pay more attention to what's around us. Look up, look down, if only so you don't trip. Ask questions. You know how kids always ask why? Ask why. And then ask why again. Then ask why again. And then ask why again. And then ask why again. Don't stop asking why until you get the answer you're looking for, or until you're escorted away by security, whichever comes first. Here's a question. If our Earth is turning at 1,000 miles per hour, why can't I jump on a trampoline in Los Angeles and end up at a diner in Phoenix a few minutes later? Right? Think deeply about that for a while. Chapter 39. Honesty. They say honesty is the best policy, but is it? It is. Actually, honesty is one of the qualities I find most attractive in a person. Another is nice ankles. Honesty is so important, and yet a lot of times it's hard to find in people. I'm not saying any of you are liars. I don't know you. I'm sure you're sweet and nice and have never accidentally dropped a jury summons down a garbage disposal. Maybe you've never uttered so much as a fib in your whole entire lives, but let's face it, you probably have. We all have. Well, I haven't. I'm always honest. Okay, see, that was a lie, and I'm sorry. We might not go around spewing huge, sweeping, outrageous lies, but in one way or another, most of us lie every now and again. I actually read a statistic that on average people lie 4 times a day. I don't know exactly what 4 lies people are telling each day, but I do know that people tend to lie about their age, their weight, their natural hair color, and how cute their friends' babies are. What a cutie pie! Look at those ears! You have to! You can't miss them! Cute! So cute! I always know that people lie on their resumes. People lie under oath, people lie to their doctors, which I've never quite understood. I know you might be embarrassed about how you got that bite on that particular part of your body, but you have to be honest about it so a trained professional can help you. I really try my best not to lie. That's true. I try to give my honest opinion about things. I try to tell it like it is. Give it to them straight. Lay it on the line. Be up front. Keep it real. Not say false stuff. I don't know any other sayings. I just try not to lie. Sometimes it's hard because I don't like to hurt people's feelings. So there have been times when a friend will get a haircut and I will see it and my initial reaction is, "Oh my God, you look like a streetwalker who got caught in a wind tunnel." But I obviously can't say that because that would be an insult to streetwalkers. So I have to say, "I love it. It looks great." But when my voice goes up like 3 octaves, "It looks great." So I'm certain they know I'm lying. How come when we lie, our voices go up so many octaves? It's a dead giveaway. It happens when we dole out compliments we don't mean it. It happens when we say things like, "You didn't have to get me anything. What do you mean you weren't invited to my party? You're always invited." Everyone knows what those mean. "You definitely had to get me something, and you haven't been invited back to the house since the urn incident of 04. And it's a mathematical fact that the higher the octave, the bigger the lie. "I didn't even hear my phone ring." It's usually like a 4 on the scale. "You think I'm sleeping with someone else?" is off the charts. I can tell when people are lying to me when they start the sentence with, "I have to be honest with you." They may as well say, "Listen, I'm about to lie straight to your face." Why do people need to clarify when they're being honest? Does that mean everything else they've ever said has been a lie? Yesterday they said they liked my sweater, but they didn't say they were being honest. Does that mean they hated it? It's so strange to me. It almost feels like they're giving me the option to not hear the truth. As if when they say, "I have to be honest with you," I might say, "No, no, no, please, only lies right now." For the most part, we're honest people, which is good because when you think about it, everything around us is based on the honor system. Look at the airport baggage claim. We all stand around a conveyor belt, totally unsupervised, and all those bags are there for anyone to take. I know because I was at the airport recently and I took 4. I got some good stuff, 3 travel irons and a large man's nightshirt. There are a lot of places that rely on us, to be honest. Banks put out candy and hope you'll only take 1 or 2 pieces. Restaurants put out toothpicks. Libraries have those giant statues of lions out front. They're practically begging us to get a crane and a flatbed truck to cart those things away. Think of how honest we're expected to be when we go to the movies. We pay for 1 ticket, but in theory, we can sneak into as many theaters as we want once we're inside. We can even pay the child's price and sneak in our own popcorn and vegan appetizers, I'm guessing. And as much as certain people and places rely on us to be honest, we rely on others to be honest with us. I mean, we hand our car keys over to a complete stranger at the valet just because he's wearing a vest. By the way, now you know why I wear a lot of vests and have so many cars. It's nice to think we can trust each other. It'd be depressing to walk around every day thinking people are lying to us all the time. I prefer to believe that people are good and honest and respect me enough to tell me the truth. It's not easy to find those people all the time, but they're out there. They're usually the people who don't hesitate to tell you you look tired or that you have broccoli hanging from your lip. They might be blunt and sometimes they might hurt your feelings with their candor, but honestly, you'll appreciate it. Chapter 40. Dreams. I'm fascinated by people's dreams. Not dreams like I want to be a pilot when I grow up. Those are stupid and boring. I mean the dreams you have when you go to sleep at night. Or because I don't mean to exclude anybody, if you're an owl listening to this, the dreams you have when you go to sleep during the day. Dreams are supposed to represent things going on in our subconscious mind. And I don't know how you feel about it, but that terrifies me. What in the world could be going on in my subconscious mind that makes me dream I'm a loom worker living in Albuquerque in the house I grew up in with Jamie Lee Curtis, 3 Lions, and Kermit the Frog? Actually, never mind. I don't want to know. I realize I just forced you to listen to a description of one of my dreams. I know it can be annoying when your friends make you listen to their dreams, so I don't usually do that to people. I'm sure you'll have crazy dreams of your own to analyze, and I'm not here to burden you with mine. That'd be really, really annoying. Except, last night, I did have a dream you should hear about because you were in it. I know it sounds crazy, but you were. You. Yes, you. Don't look around. Don't look over your shoulder. You. The listener. You. You and I were ice skating in Germany with the Pope and Colonel Sanders. Crazy, right? I know. I had no idea they hung out together. Colonel Sanders wasn't a very good ice skater, and he kept falling down. But the Pope was amazing. He kept doing these figure eights that were truly Olympic caliber. I asked him if he'd ever be interested in joining my ice hockey league. In my dream, I was in an ice hockey league. It was very surprising because in real life, I've never stepped foot on an ice skating rink. It's not that I can't skate, I just don't like to be that cold. I also can't skate. The Pope said he was interested, but I have to be honest, it felt like one of those, yeah, sure, I'll call you about it one day. But I understood. He's the Pope. Anyway, at one point I noticed that you had some sauerkraut on your lip, so I said, you have some sauerkraut on your lip. And you were like, here? And I was like, no, other side. So you tried to remove it with your tongue, but when your tongue came out of your mouth, it was like 3 feet long, like some reptile. And then, you turned into a Komodo dragon. You know, like those big lizards you find on islands near Japan? So I started to think, oh great, how am I going to get these ice skates off the Komodo dragon and return them? Because they were rented and I had left a $10 deposit. And at that point, I wasn't sure if you were a Komodo dragon and still my friend, or just a real Komodo dragon. And Komodo dragons are poisonous, not to mention how strong their tails are. So I said, Betsy, is that your name? Anyway, it was in my dream. Anyway, I said, Betsy, to find out if you knew you were a Komodo dragon. I thought if you were still Betsy, you could speak like a human, even with that tongue. Well, what happened next, you won't believe. You didn't answer me. Instead, you just started singing. You got up on your hind legs, balancing on your tail, and started belting out some old Broadway musical. Ethel Merman suddenly appeared and was singing with you. A large crowd gathered all around, and when you both finished the tune, everyone applauded and cheered. People were saying, hey, that Komodo dragon can really sing. And I said, that's Betsy. She's my friend. I was so proud of you. You bowed and you scratched Ethel Merman with your tail, but she was so happy with your performance, she didn't even mind. Then 2 seconds later, somehow we were back in the States, and it was the late 90s, and you were on Star Search. You were still part Komodo dragon, and I had a special gown made for you so your tail could stick out. It was very expensive. You were a little nervous to sing in front of Ed McMahon because you loved him so much, but you sang great. You got 2¾ stars. Unfortunately, you were beaten by the rock group Journey. You were heartbroken that you lost, so I took you out to a bar to have a few cocktails. We were having a great time until some drunk guy started making fun of your dress. I punched him in the stomach, and I got thrown out. You didn't even try and take up for me. You were such a bitch. You know what? Who do you think you are, after all we've been through? I don't even know how you had the nerve to buy my audiobook. I'm assuming you finally got your operation to turn back into a human, probably with the money I made you. Don't walk away while I'm talking to you. Who's calling you right now? Was that a text? From your new best friend? I wonder if you ever told her that you were a reptile in your past. I bet she wouldn't be so quick to drive you to the airport now, knowing all those lies about you. Not so cool anymore, huh? I'm sorry I lashed out. You didn't deserve that. It was just a dream, and obviously I'm dealing with some reptilian issues that have nothing to do with you. I'm so glad you bought my audiobook. Please enjoy the rest of the chapters that are probably not about you. You look great as a human, by the way. What kind of moisturizer do you use? Chapter 41. Answers to Frequently Asked Questions. Yes. Yes. Nope. One time in high school. Three times in my 20s. Rocks, no salt. Yes. Four. Never, and how dare you? I will take no further questions. Chapter 42. Don't worry. Be happy. If there's any message I want you to take from this audiobook, it is that befriending a parrot can be both frustrating and infinitely rewarding. And if there's another message I want you to take from this audiobook, it's that you can be happy. There is so much bad news in the world right now, and sometimes it's hard to see the positive side of things. But it is possible, and there are things you can do to be happy. In the interest of full disclosure, I want you to know that I am not a spiritual advisor. Yes, it's true that if my mother didn't name me Ellen, she was going to name me Deepak. But she didn't, and that is not the path I followed. And I would never want to mislead you by telling you that I have all the answers, because I don't. I mean, I do know a lot. Like, a lot. I am very worldly. What's that? No, I am not in Mensa or anything, but it could be, obviously. I just don't have time for all that paperwork or the meetings. God, those are probably a drag. So in conclusion, the only reason I are not in Mensa is because I don't have time for the paperwork or the meetings. Moving on. I spend a lot of time listening to spiritual advisors, and I have read a lot of books on the power of positive thinking. And I agree with what they say. It makes a big difference in your life when you stay positive. I am positive of this. It helps to surround yourself with positive people. No one likes to be around negative Nellies. Try and spend more time with positive Peters and happy Helens. And Beyonce. She is so pretty and fun. Another thing you can do, and this is just off the top of my head, is watch my show every day. I try to make it an escape from the things in life that are not so great. I keep it happy and positive and upbeat. Plus, it's much cheaper than a prescription with none of the negative side effects. It has been proven that when we're positive and happy, endorphins rush through our system. Now, I'm no scientist, but I know what endorphins are. They're tiny little magical elves that swim through your bloodstream and tell funny jokes to each other. And when they reach your brain, you hear what they're saying, and that boosts your health and happiness. Knock, knock, who's there? Little endorphin who? Little endorphin Annie. And then the endorphins laugh, and then you laugh. See? It's science. Don't get me wrong, everyone has good days and bad days. We're humans. We have emotions. In fact, I don't trust anyone who doesn't have emotions. Have you ever met someone who says they've never had a bad day in their whole entire life? Don't you just want to poke them in the face? I don't understand people like that. We all wake up on the wrong side of the bed some days. Some days we even wake up on the wrong side of our neighbor's driveway because of a late night out and some confusion over strikingly similar front doors. My point is, life is about balance. The good and the bad. The highs and the lows. The piña and the colada. The thing everyone should realize is that the key to happiness is being happy by yourself and for yourself. If everything you have got stripped away, your home, your job, your family, your things, your favorite t-shirt with all the holes in it that you won't throw away even though it reveals a large part of your stomach region, if you lost all those things and you had to live in a cave all alone with absolutely nothing, you should still be happy. Happiness comes from within. You have the power to change your own mindset so that all the negative, horrible thoughts that try to invade your psyche are replaced with happy, positive, wonderful thoughts. I myself have made a conscious choice to not allow negative thoughts to even enter my mind. Is it hard? You bet it is. Negative thoughts are powerful. For example, if I didn't make that commitment to myself to think positively all the time, I would probably start thinking about how scary it would be to live in a cave all alone with absolutely nothing. Because, I mean, If I really think about the reality of that situation, it's terrifying to be trapped in a cave with all those bats flying around everywhere. And the spiders, oh, there are probably literally millions and millions of spiders in the caves. And I mean, seriously, I don't have anything against bats and spiders, especially if they're happy living their lives all alone in caves. More power to them, I say. It's just that it's so dark in caves. I guess that goes without saying, they're caves. But once you get inside, there's not even a hint or a trace of light, just little bat eyes darting around everywhere waiting for you to turn your head so they could just pounce on the back of your neck like a cheetah with bat wings. Oh, I'm so scared of the dark. I usually leave the bathroom light on all night long with the door slightly ajar. Notice my Mensa level vocabulary. Ajar. Just so that there's a strip of light. And I know it wastes electricity, but one time I woke up in a pitch black room and I thought for sure I'd been kidnapped by cave dwellers who had taken me and my bed to their underground cave where they would train me to move like a dinosaur and eat only tree bark. Turns out I had an eye mask on, but that's neither here nor there. My point is, I like a little bit of light. You know, there's probably a lot of moisture in caves too, which would be bad for my hair. And all those sharp edges, I wouldn't want to move. I'd just sit in a cave all day long and I'd think about how scared I was to be there. I'm probably not going to sleep tonight thinking about how I could easily end up trapped in a cave one day, surrounded by bats, spiders, water droplets, sharp edges, and complete and total darkness. What was I saying? Oh, right, negative thoughts. Get rid of them. I did. You know what a wise person once said? Why pay full price for a sweater when you can steal it for free? You know what another wise person once said? Happiness is a journey, not a destination. Amen, sister friend. Let me break that down for you so it's easy to understand. Happiness is a journey. This means that happiness is like a long car ride. Let's say you're in a car and you're driving to, I don't know, Hawaii. Sure, it seems like Hawaii, your destination, is going to be the happiest part. But really, the car ride is the happiest part because of all the fun games you can play in a car and all the stops you can make and the beautiful public toilet areas, not to mention how fun it would be to drive on top of the ocean. Be happy on your journey to Hawaii so that once you get there, you can be miserable. Wait, I don't know if that's right. However you choose to live your life, just try to enjoy it as much as you can. Fill yourself with joy, not the dishwashing liquid. And accept what life throws at you. The good, the bad, the ugly, the awkward, the fun, the boring, the sweet, the sour, the salty, the ripe, the unripe. I'm sorry, I have to be right back. I just got really hungry. Chapter 43. Magic. I love magic. I've had a lot of magicians and illusionists perform on my show, and I'm always in awe of what they can do. I actually learned a mind-reading trick, and I thought I would try it out on you if you'd like, okay? Okay, think of a number. Any number. Just think of it. I'm going to give you just a second. Okay, you got it? Okay, say it out loud. That's what I was thinking. Isn't that freaky? I know. I don't know how it works. Okay, you guys, I know. Chapter 44. Girl power. The bra, disposable diapers, whiteout, a medical syringe, windshield wipers, chocolate chip cookies, Spanx. What do all these things have in common? They're all in my shopping cart right now. Shoot, I must have taken someone else's cart by accident. I hate when that happens. Well, anyway, you know what else these things have in common? They were all invented by a woman. Not the same woman. They were each invented by different women over the course of the last 100 years or so. That would be incredible if the same woman invented all those things. What an eclectic and potentially unstable person that would be. And those are just a few of the things that female ladies have invented. The list goes on and includes things that have become staples in our everyday lives, like the car heater, the dishwasher, the electric washing machine, and perhaps one of the greatest inventions of our time, the trash can with a foot pedal. We take so many of these things for granted, and yet without the women who invented them, we would be cold, filthy people with soiled dishes, disgusting cans, and unruly breasts. I'm very proud to be a woman. I've been one my whole life. And I know that without the amazing and inspiring women who came before me, I wouldn't be where I am today. I grew up admiring strong, funny women like Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett. Barbara Walters, Diane Sawyer, and Oprah Winfrey paved the way for me to be doing exactly what I'm doing. Oprah paved the way with actual gold because she had some left over from when she paved her driveway. And now that I have my own show on television, I feel a sense of responsibility to follow in their footsteps and have a positive influence on these young girls and women who watch me every day. That's why I keep things light and upbeat, and it's why I try to have powerful and influential women on my show to serve as examples for the people at home. I love having women like Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton on my show. I also love having regular, everyday women on my show with inspiring stories about their personal journeys. And one time I had a woman on who could bend over backward and put a hat on her head using only her feet. If that's not inspiring, I don't know what is. My show is targeted to women. I know men watch too, and I'm happy about that. I like to think men, women, children, and cats can enjoy my contagious wit in equal measure. But overall, the audience for my show is mostly made up of women. I don't know exactly what the demographics are. It's a very confusing and complicated system that only people with high government clearance levels can fully understand. But I believe our key demographic is women 25 to 54 years old. Beyond that, we try to target Armenians between the ages of 35 and 80 and women named Diane between the ages of 18 and 104. I don't know if that's right, and don't even get me started on the rating system. From what I understand, there's a gentleman in a basement somewhere keeping track of who turns their televisions on between the hours of 8 a.m. and 6 p.m., and he writes it down on a piece of lint, and then, based on his annual report and opinion, shows get canceled or picked up. Anyway, I just want to be able to use the platform I have in front of millions of people around the world every day for good things. I want young girls to know that they should dream big, and that if they put their minds to it, they can accomplish anything. When I go out and do my show every day, I'm thinking two things. Can I inspire someone today? And will my guests have good breath? I always think of that James Brown song, "It's a Man's, Man's, Man's World," when I think about girl power. I also think about the Spice Girls, which makes me think about spices, which makes me think about food, which makes me hungry, which makes me need to eat a sandwich every time that song comes on the radio. I like James Brown, but that song is so wrong. The lyrics are, "Man made the cars to take us over the road. Man made the trains to carry heavy loads. Man made electric light to take us out of the dark. Man made the boat for the water like Noah made the ark. This is a man's, man's, man's world." Somebody needs to listen to what I said about Spanx just a few paragraphs ago, or perhaps give a listen to my personal anthem, "Sisters Are Doing It for Themselves," as sung by one of the most brilliant songstresses of all time, Aretha Franklin. Sisters are doing it for themselves, standing on their own two feet and ringing on their own bells. The inferior sex got a new exterior. We got doctors, lawyers, politicians too. Everybody take a look around. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? There's a woman right next to you. Sisters are doing it for themselves. Women can do stuff too. And to whoever is listening to me or watching me or reading me, that is what I want to say. The world can benefit from more smart ladies. I like smart people. I assume most people do. I've never heard anyone say, "Boy, do I love idiots." Though I'm sure some people have. Maybe at some point we won't have to break success down along gender lines. Maybe we won't have to say a man did this or a woman invented that. Maybe we'll just be able to say this wonderful, smart, creative person did something extraordinary, and that will be that. But until then, I'm proud to be part of the sisters who are doing it for themselves. Chapter 45. Boredom. You ever just think, "I'm bored"? Maybe because we're always moving at such a fast pace, or because there are only so many Lifetime movies about perfect couples who aren't actually perfect you can watch in one weekend. Every once in a while, when we're sitting still, we find ourselves thinking, "I'm really bored right now." So here are some suggestions for things you can do when you get bored. Clean my house. Look at your pets. If you look at them long enough, you can almost figure out what they're thinking. Usually it's, "Why has she been looking at me for so long? She must be really bored." Cut up fruit. Sext. Make a smoothie. Volunteer. Volunteer opinions to strangers. Hitchhike. Photograph geese. Put on a blazer and pretend to be a docent at your local museum. Chapter 46. Ellen's Guide to Gift Giving. It is better to give than to receive. Liars. Gift giving might be one of the most complicated things that exists on this earth. It's an art that requires skill, and some people have it and some people don't. The people who have it got you tickets to your favorite opera last year. The people who don't got you a keychain of the letter O, even though your name is Jane. There are no strict rules when it comes to gift giving, but there are some guidelines. It's good etiquette to bring something whenever you go to someone's house. It's polite and generous, and it shows you appreciate being welcomed into somebody's home. My question is, though, how long does that go on for? I mean, what if you've been to their house like a million times? Do you still have to bring something? The first time you go, you bring a bottle of wine. The second time, maybe you bring flowers. When does it stop? And are the gifts supposed to get better and bigger? After a few years of game nights, does it become, "Look what we brought you, Joyce. It's an above-the-ground pool"? My brother-in-law and sister-in-law are very good at gift-giving. They are extremely polite and bring something every single time they come over for any occasion. They could be coming over because they left their sunglasses at our house, and they're going to bring us, like, a brand new set of crystal goblets or something. They write thank you notes. They send flowers. And they're so great about paying the dry cleaning bills I send them after they get little specks of dirt and wine on my outside furniture. There are some people who refuse to bring anything when they go to someone's house. Even if you bring something every time you go to their house, they bring nothing to yours. Here's my solution for people like that. When you go to their house, you take something. You bring a bottle of wine, you take their microwave. You bring a bundt cake, you take their car. It's yin and yang. House gifts are pretty easy to manage. Where it gets tricky is holiday gifts. I don't know where you draw the line at holiday gifts. When you're a kid, the only people you have to get gifts for are your parents and your siblings and your dog. That's it. And it's usually a macaroni picture frame covered in glitter. As you get older, you have to give gifts to more people because you have more people in your life trying to suck you dry. You have your family, your friends, your family's friends, your friends' families, everyone at work, and all those people get nicer and nicer around the holidays. Everyone's extra helpful. Do you need anything else, Mr. Generous? Can I shine your shoes for you? And I'm always like, don't be silly. You should be doing that anyway. It gets harder and harder to figure out where the cutoff line is. I always like to get something from my mail carrier, but then I have to get something from my UPS person. That means I have to get something for my FedEx person, my garbage person, my pool person, my plant person, lady man person, my fish pond person. My trainer, my vocal coach, my dog's vocal coach, and of course, the woman who washes my face. And then what about the people I hire to do all my Christmas shopping? Do I have to get them gifts too? No matter what, you're going to forget someone who didn't forget you. Here's how you deal with that. Take what they got you and tell them how much it means to you, then reach into your bag and say, I got you something special also. Want to know what it is? Come here. Come a little closer, closer still. One more step to me. I got you a hug, and then you squeeze them real tight until you think you've squeezed all the disappointment out of them. I feel bad for people with December birthdays because they have to deal with a combo gift. They're constantly hearing, this is for your birthday and Christmas. Happy Birthmas. A combo gift means you get one real gift, and if you're lucky, one extra thing your friend found when she was in the checkout line at Target. Ooh, a sweater and crazy glue. Thank you. Well, I know how much you love to glue stuff permanently. Merry birthday. It's really bad if your birthday is actually on Christmas Day, unless you're Jesus. In that case, what a party. By the way, if you're Jesus, thank you so much for buying this audiobook. What an honor. Is there any way you'd give a quote for the replay edition? I mean, who wouldn't want to buy it if Jesus recommended it on the back? I only ask because Oprah's book club ended, and it would be a huge get. But you don't have to. You don't have to decide right now. Anyway, thanks again, Jesus. Anyway, if your birthday is on Christmas Day and you're not Jesus, you should start telling people your birthday is on June 9th or something. Just read up on the traits of a Gemini. Suddenly you're a multitasker who loves the color yellow. Because not only do you get stuck with the combo gift, you get the combo song. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Birthday, Terry. We wish you a Merry Happy Birthday, Terry. Miss wish you a Merry Happy Birthday. Just a horrible song. It's not fair, and I have a message for parents out there. Don't do that to your kids. Plan your love. I'm not great at baby math, so I'm just going to say in the early part of the year, maybe January until March, stay away from each other. It's not going to be easy. Those are winter months, and you're going to want to stay warm, but unfortunately, one of you is going to have to sleep in the tent in the backyard, or one of you can climb that mountain in Brazil you're always journaling about. Just stay away from each other. You can talk on the phone if you keep it clean. It's for the benefit of all mankind. My birthday's in January, just a few weeks after the holidays. What that means for me is that I get my holiday gifts, and then for my birthday, I get mostly re-gifted holiday gifts. Because everyone does the same thing after the holidays. They make their piles of keep and re-gift. The iPod you keep, the ugly sweater you re-gift. Digital camera you keep, inappropriately shaped candle you give to the creepy guy who works in your payroll department. I'm lucky my birthday's in January, because people tend to re-gift the good stuff first. If your birthday is in January or even February, you might actually end up with an iPod because maybe someone got you one for Christmas, but you already had one. Or you could get a really nice bottle of wine because in January your friend still thinks he's not going to drink this year. But as the year goes on, the re-gifts get worse. By June, you're getting a framed picture of your friend's nephew in a frame that says, "Our precious boy." And by the fall, people aren't even re-gifting anymore. They're just emptying their basements. If your birthday is in October, you either are getting a ping-pong paddle or an infant's car seat. Happy birthday. Maybe you'll adopt one day, Grandma. Maybe we put too much focus on gift-giving. It shouldn't be about a gift or about who gave you what. We all know what it should be about, money. Why isn't it acceptable to just give cash? That's what we all want. Let's just cut to the chase. No. Well, yes, but that's not what life is about. I do genuinely enjoy giving people gifts and seeing their face light up when they open them. I once brought a box of wine to a dinner party at Oprah's house, and the look on her face was priceless. And that feels good inside. So I guess what I'm saying is it's better to err on the side of being polite and giving gifts for all occasions, birthdays, holidays, Flag Day. And you know what makes the best gift of all? Audiobooks like this. And things made out of money. Chapter 47. Adults Only Chapter. As I said, people of all ages watch my show. I have a lot of young viewers, but I also have a lot of older viewers. This chapter is for my older fans, those of you who are slightly more mature. If any kids are listening to this audiobook, skip to the next index point now. This chapter is not appropriate for children. It's for adults who experience adult situations, such as eating dinner before 6 o'clock and struggling to read menus in dim lighting conditions. Many adults, myself included, have trouble reading menus when they go out to eat at restaurants because the font is way too small. I know there are products to help with this problem, like reading and magnifying glasses, but I have a better idea. Make the font size larger. There should be a worldwide standard for menu font size. In the PDF, there's a sample menu with suitable font size. For this audiobook, for my mature viewers, I will speak louder. Daily specials for Shea DeGeneres. Appetizer! Organic mixed greens with teeny tiny tomatoes. The main course is something delicious. Sides are fresh broccolini and zucchinini. Dessert, the raspberry sorbet with capers. I don't know why, but everything sounds better with capers, so I just added that. Chapter 48. Timeline of a Celebrity's Day. 10 a.m. Gently woken up by houseboy Manuel. 10 a.m. and 7 seconds. Quietly utter the word snooze, letting Manuel know he is to return in 9 minutes. 10 a.m. and 8 seconds. Dream about ponies. 10:09 a.m. Gently woken up again by houseboy Manuel. 10:09 a.m. and 5 seconds. Quietly utter the word snooze, coffee, letting Manuel know he's to return in 9 minutes with a cup of coffee. 10:09 a.m. and 6 seconds. Dream about ponies being friends with turtles. 10:18 a.m. Gently woken up again by houseboy Manuel. Fed coffee. 10:25 a.m. Carried into shower. 10:30 a.m. Bathed, shampooed, told I'm pretty by shower robot 3000. 11 a.m. Driven to work in a solar-powered dune buggy. 11:30 a.m. Greeted at work by receptionist, told I'm pretty. 1 p.m. Fed lunch. 1:30. Yoga. 2:30 p.m. Pilates. 4 p.m. Tape talk show. 5 p.m. Helicopter home. 6 p.m. Fed dinner in treehouse. 8 p.m. Read bedtime story by author of book I'm currently reading, tucked in by houseboy Manuel, told I'm pretty and to dream of ponies. Chapter 49. Sleep. I just read an interesting statistic. 49% of people think it's wheelbarrow, not wheelbarrow. I also read that 33% of Americans suffer from some sort of sleep disorder. That's a lot of people. According to my math, that means nearly 104% of the people listening to this audiobook right now have trouble sleeping at night. About half of you out there are going to take sleeping pills to try and fall asleep, and I have to admit that worries me. I'm not a doctor or a mother or that older woman from Touched by an Angel who tried to guide people on the right path, but when I hear about friends and loved ones who are on sleeping pills, for some reason I just want to steer them away from doing that. I know why I worry. It's because of all the stories I've heard about people who do some pretty crazy things while they're on sleeping pills. Things like walking in their sleep, driving in their sleep, even eating in their sleep. Some people do more in their sleep than I do in a whole weekend. Sleep eating is fascinating to me. People get up in the middle of the night and start eating things that they find around the house, sometimes things that aren't even edible. And they have absolutely no memory of it until they wake up the next morning and find the remnants of a half-eaten sofa in their great room. Some people only find out they've been sleep eating after they start to gain weight. I read about someone who gained 7 pounds and had no idea why. Can you imagine waking up one day full of pudding and having to ask your spouse, honey, quick question, did we go on a 10-day cruise last night? Sleep is one of the most important things we need to stay happy and healthy, and being the type of person that I am, I want to help each and every one of my sleep-deprived listeners in any way that I can. I thought of some things that you can do to get to sleep without drugs. So if you, dear listener, are one of the millions of sufferers, please listen on while I attempt to cure you. Now, some of you are probably listening to this audiobook in bed to try and fall asleep. Silly. Unless you get tired from laughing too hard, this isn't the kind of book that's going to knock you out. You need to listen to or read something boring, like a story written by Harry Connick Jr. or something. Or better yet, a math or science textbook. That'll put you right out. By the time you find one of those laying around your house, it's going to be midnight. Plus, I don't want you to have to get up from bed right now. You'll end up tripping over a lamp cord on your way to the bookshelf. The cord will knock over the lamp, causing the light bulb inside to shatter into a million pieces. You'll keep walking, trying to avoid all the glass, but how can you? It's all tiny, tiny shards scattered all about a shag rug. So you'll accidentally step in one piece and you'll scream, shoot, because your New Year's resolution was to curse less, and even though it's hard, you've managed to hold pretty true to your word. Except for that one time when you jammed your finger in the car window outside of church, and you yelled such a specific, horrible series of expletives that you actually had to stop going to that church and go to the one in the neighboring town. After you yell shoot, your wife or husband or son or daughter will wake up from all the commotion. Your son was probably awake anyway because he just got home after sneaking out of the house to meet his friends in the mall parking lot. That's always been your greatest fear. You worry that he goes there to cause mischief, but really he's a good kid who just wants to fit in and hang out with his friends. He actually never even touched a cigarette, let alone smoked one, or smoked anything for that matter. I mean, one time he tried cocaine, but that was only because his friends told him it was sugar, and who doesn't love sugar? Especially after sleeping with a hooker. I'm not saying your son slept with a hooker. I'm just saying everyone loves sugar. So your son runs into the living room to see what happened. He finds you clutching your foot, which is bleeding from the glass, muttering curses under your breath. It's actually a nice moment because he gets you some ice and asks if you're okay. You tell him you are, and you ask him if you can borrow one of his algebra books because you're having trouble sleeping. Turns out he's a senior in high school, and he hasn't taken algebra in 3 years. He takes calculus now. He gets upset that you don't know anything about him, yells something about his real dad, and storms out of the house. But he never tells you where his calculus books are, so you're back to square one, only worse off because of the glass in your foot and the sadness in your heart. So what I've done for you is I've included some math equations here in this chapter. You just have to read them, and you'll be dreaming of rainbows or puppies or being naked in English class in no time at all. E equals mc squared. Still awake? The square root of 144 is 12. Still up? If a train carrying cargo pants is traveling due east at 50 miles an hour and a bus carrying bananas is traveling north at 60 miles an hour, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? Have you fallen asleep yet? Okay, if that didn't do the trick, I have more help to offer. People love to count sheep to go to sleep. But that can be hard, too, because you have to get out of bed, you have to find a reputable shepherd in your area, and hope they can deliver you over 109 sheep on a moment's notice. So what I'm going to recommend instead is that you count, stay with me, imaginary sheep. Yep, that's why they pay me the big bucks for ideas like that. Let's do it together. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 14, 20, 21, 22, 48. I'm not great at counting. Let's move on. I have one more idea. This will work best if you pretend I'm hovering over your face, swinging a pocket watch from side to side. Stare straight ahead. You're getting very sleepy. Very sleepy. Very sleepy. Wait, wake up. I just realized something very important. I don't want you waking up in the morning, going to work, and telling people you fell asleep last night listening to my audiobook. That would be horrible. What would they think? They would think that my book is boring and dull. I can't have that. Wake up. Go get yourself a cup of coffee. Pour some Red Bull in it. Splash some cold water on your face. And listen on. Chapter 50. Letter to Mall Security. To whom it may concern. I am writing in regard to your letter dated March 3rd, where you cite my potential involvement in what your company has deemed the vase-breaking incident. First of all, kudos to your team for tracking me down so quickly using, I assume, only my license plate number. I assure you I was not fleeing the scene, as your letter indicated. I was simply on my way to an appointment I suddenly remembered I had. And the reason you may have heard the words, "See you suckers," as I drove away was because I happened to have a song playing in my car with the lyrics, "See you suckers, bye-bye mall cops, try and get me if you can." I am willing to admit that it was, in fact, me riding around the mall on the Segway I borrowed from a mall security officer. I would like to offer my sincerest apology for the chaos that ensued. It was never my intention to ride the Segway all the way through the mall, up the escalator in Macy's, down the escalator in JCPenney, around the parking lot, and into the kitchen of the Cheesecake Factory. I thought I was taking it back to the mall security headquarters, which I realize now is inside the mall under the sign that says Mall Security Headquarters and not inside the dumpster outside the restaurant. As for the vase, I did not break it, and I'm happy to explain how it ended up shattered all over the floor of the Pottery Barn. What happened was, after I did a bit of shopping in the mall, I was tired and decided to sit down inside of the Pottery Barn store on the second level. They have the most comfortable sofas by far. I must have dozed off, and about an hour or so later, I felt a tap on my shoulder. When I sprang up off the sofa, the reason I punched the Pottery Barn employee in the face was because at the time I was having a dream about being a pro boxer and fighting Mike Tyson inside a Crate and Barrel. Weird, I know, since I was actually, as I stated earlier, inside a Pottery Barn. The employee, I think his name was John or Joe or Wisconsin, I don't know, everyone's got weird names nowadays, asked me to leave the store because I wasn't buying anything and other customers wanted to try out the sofa. He was rude and I told him how I felt. Just then my phone rang. It was a friend of mine named Carol who I hadn't talked to in months and months. She had some very exciting news to share about a promotion at work. I won't go into specifics, but she's been working in the sales department of a large telecommunications company for almost 23 years, and she's been waiting for a promotion for a long, long time. They've had cutbacks over the years, and it's a hard time right now because so many people are switching to cell phones. Do you know that barely anyone has a landline anymore? Carol is a landline specialist. I don't know if that's her exact title, but that's her department. I always feel a little guilty when she has to call me on my cell phone, like it's a direct attack on what she does for a living. She doesn't feel that way. We've talked about it before, and she has no problem with it. It's just something I always think about. But it's conversations like that where you really get stuff out in the open that makes friendships stronger. So when Carol told me about her big promotion to vice president or something of the entire company, I'm not sure which, it's very hard to hear inside of a mall, I got so excited I started jumping up and down on the sofa. Well, that apparently knocked some cushions off, which in turn knocked into a vase, which in turn fell on the floor and shattered. I don't know who designs your stores, but carpeting might be a good idea if you're going to have fragile objects on display that can fall and break into thousands of pieces when someone does something as benign as jump on a sofa. So anyway, you can see that this is Carol's fault. I'm happy to send you her phone number and address so you can send her a copy of the bill. I will be forwarding my invoice onto her as well. Now, the reason I ran as fast as I could out of the store at the exact moment Carol made me smash the vase was because, as you may recall, Wisconsin had asked me to leave. And after I ran out of the store, the reason I kneeled down behind the mall kiosk until Wisconsin passed me by was because I saw a beautiful hat that I thought might fit my head. I don't know if you like hats, but that kiosk has so many to choose from. I have a small head, and it's really hard for me to find hats, so when I see a few that might work, I have to stop. When Wisconsin finally caught up to me, and good for him for recognizing me under that big sun hat and oversized sunglasses, the reason I spoke with a French accent and pretended not to understand him was because I was practicing for a part I'm playing in a French movie called Les Mystérieuses Ladies. Anyway, so I really like to get into my roles even when I'm practicing, and that's why I quickly grabbed the Segway from the security guard who started to approach us. You know how every French film has an exciting getaway scene where the car drives down a long set of steps? That's what I was trying to emulate when I took the Segway down the escalator. I realize now that it was very dangerous, and it was unfortunate timing that I yelled that minute-long series of expletives just as those children were leaving the Build-A-Bear workshop. But you have to admit, the way they repeat those words in their tiny little voices is adorable. As for the money I took out of the mall fountain, that's a much simpler explanation. After the commotion at the Pottery Barn and the Segway chase and my purely coincidental makeover into a geisha at the makeup counter at Bloomingdale's, I stood next to the fountain to take a breather. I saw some children making wishes and throwing money into it, and I happened to tell them that the more money they throw in, the more likely it is that their wishes will come true. I mean, a penny doesn't get you anything nowadays, and kids need to learn that lesson. It was my understanding that any money they threw into the fountain that exceeded 1 cent then belonged to me. I definitely didn't realize that my getting into the fountain to claim my money would result in such an intense underwater handstand competition between so many people. I realize that you still might be interested in pressing charges, but I have to say, if it wasn't for all the stress Carol caused by breaking the vase, none of this would have happened. Sincerely and fondly, Ellen. P.S. If you're wondering how three of the horses from the carousel next to the food court ended up in my backyard, I am happy to explain that in a separate letter. Chapter 51. How to become a billionaire. Number 1. Make a lot of money. Number 2. Don't spend it. Chapter 52. 5 extremely easy ways to make a lot of money. Number 1. Win the Mega Millions jackpot. Number 2. Create a social networking site that every single person on earth and elsewhere wants to join. Number 3. Write a hit song using the word love and the phrase I remember. People go crazy for songs about love and memories. Number 4. Write a wildly successful series of novels about magical teenage vampire hobbits. Number 5. Have a major Hollywood studio turn novels about aforementioned magical teenage vampire hobbits into a gigantic motion picture franchise. There. Easy. Chapter 53. Gambling tips. I love to play poker. I play it every single day in my dressing room before I go out to do my show. I play it at home. I play it at friends' houses. I play it on long plane rides and short plane rides. Basically, if I'm awake and I'm not eating, working, or training my dogs to set the table, I'm playing poker. I used to love going to Las Vegas. What a clean, healthy town that is. Here's a fun fact about Las Vegas. You can literally do anything there. Anything. You can smoke in casinos, you can drink 4 jugs of tequila at once, you can try to spin yourself around on a roulette wheel while wearing only a piece of string on your bottom if you so desire. But what you cannot do under any circumstances, and I found this out the hard way, is eat almonds at a blackjack table. That is a true story. I once tried to eat almonds at a card table, and I was told by the dealer to put them away because I wasn't allowed to eat them there. Sexual encounters with an escort? You got it! Wildly inappropriate public intoxication any time. Having a little protein while doubling down? How dare you even think about it, you stupid, stupid fool. I don't even know how many of you gamble. How could I? We've only just met. But for those of you who enjoy a little risk-taking, I thought I would give you a few tips on staying up, should you find yourselves in a casino or on a riverboat anytime soon. Slot machines. Slot machines can be hours and hours of fun. Things spin around and light up when you win, and they make all kinds of loud, exciting noises that make it sound like coins are pouring out of the machines, even though nowadays you only get a piece of paper, which is much easier to carry around and a lot more sanitary in case you wanted to play a game and then eat some almonds or something with your hands. Just kidding, you're not allowed to do that inside a casino. All the slots have different themes, from animals and sports to Wheel of Fortune and Sex and the City. What is more fun than lining up Samantha's Cosmos to win a really big bonus? I'll tell you what, lining up Carrie Bradshaw's shoes for an even bigger bonus. There's no question that slots are fun, but here's what you need to know when you're playing the slots. Walk away when you're up. You have to. Just walk away. Then walk back and see what one more spin will do for you. If you don't win the jackpot, immediately walk away again. Take a breather, then walk back and try the machine right next to the one you already played. You know you should have played that one in the first place. It was speaking to you, but you didn't go with your gut. If for some crazy reason you don't win the jackpot on that one, walk away again. Seriously, walk away and go straight to a roulette table. Roulette. Roulette is a lot of fun. Here's my tip for roulette. Always bet on red, unless red isn't coming up, in which case you should really bet on black. Similarly, always bet on even. However, if that doesn't work, I cannot stress this enough, you must bet on odd. Here's another tip. Do not place a tic-tac on your winning number on the roulette wheel and think that people won't notice. They will notice. They will not get as angry with you for placing a tic-tac on the roulette wheel as they would for, let's say, eating a nut at a blackjack table, but they will get angry. There are cameras everywhere in casinos everywhere. If you think you're alone in an elevator when you decide to look in the mirror to check if there's anything in your teeth, you're not. Someone in the security office is getting a horrific eyeful of the inside of your nose. Next tip for roulette. If none of your numbers or colors or odds or evens are coming up, walk away. I mean it. Get up, turn around, and start walking. Go directly to a poker table. Poker. You know what I always say. I say it every day, and when I'm not saying it, I'm singing it. You gotta know when to hold 'em, and you gotta know when to fold 'em. And you gotta never, ever, ever try to eat shelled almonds at a blackjack table, you dummy. Now, you can know when to hold 'em, or fold them yourself, or you can do what I do. Ask the other players at the table what they're going to do first, and then decide. Maybe treat it like a friendly game of Go Fish. Hey, do you have an ace of spades? How about a pair of kings? They may say go fish, or they might say go something else, but I think it's worth a try. If you find that you're not winning too many hands at poker and or the people at your table are getting mad at you, walk away. I've never been more serious. Just take your 15 shots of straight vodka and your hooker, throw your almonds in the nearest trash can immediately, and walk away. Head to the closest craps table. Craps. To be honest, it's hard for me to give you too many tips for craps because I don't understand a thing about it. First of all, you can't sit down, which is ridiculous. Instead, people are crowded around a table throwing things and yelling, yo, and loose deuce, and give me four the hard way. It sounds like spring break with the cast of Jersey Shore. My only tip for craps is, and it's more of a request, please do not blow in the dice, especially during cold and flu season. There are enough germs in a casino without your getting your spittle all over the place. Your lucky blow is going to be someone else's unlucky whooping cough. If you find that craps isn't a lucky game for you, walk away. Take all your chips, put them in your pockets, and I really mean this, go straight to the cashier. Ask him or her what game they think you should try next. They usually have a feeling about these things. Finally, whatever you do, wherever you go, whichever game you decide to play, do not ever, 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 ever even think about bringing a healthy snack such as an almond onto a casino floor. Good luck. Chapter 54. Pondering. One thing that always makes me happy is being out in nature. I love nature. I love trees. I love flowers. I love those hedges that are shaped like giraffes. I don't know how they grow like that, but they are magnificent. I spend a lot of time outside every day. I love doing yoga outside. I love to meditate outside. Sometimes I even shower outside. What I'm trying to say is I lock myself out of the house a lot. I just love being outside. In the mornings, I take a cup of coffee out to my koi pond, plop myself down right next to my life-size garden statue of Helen Mirren, and do what one is supposed to do by a pond. I ponder. I ponder all sorts of things. I ponder life and our infinite universe and how lucky we are to find ourselves surrounded by incredible forces of nature every single day. And then I ponder other stuff, like how do mermaids always seem to find seashells big enough to wear as bras? Whenever I go to the beach, the biggest shell I can find in one piece is the size of a Skittle. I'd still make it into a bra, but it's very, very tiny. I ponder that expression, you're a big fish in a small pond. Do the big fish in my pond know that expression? Do they swim around and try to make the smaller fish feel bad because they're so small? Or do the small fish know the expression, good things come in small packages? Maybe they swim around knowing that even though they're small, they have a lot to offer, like quinoa or an Olsen twin. I can sit and stare into my pond for hours and hours, admiring the stunning reflections of the sky and the clouds and the birds. We have so many different kinds of birds near our house. They're always chirping away, and I imagine them saying things like, oh, that Ellen, she's so connected to nature. That's so rare to see in a human. Yes, she seems so laid back and cool. Look at her sitting on that bench, drinking her coffee, I imagine another bird saying. I don't know why they sound like that, but they do. And then the first bird chirps back, I bet it'd be so fun to hang out with her. She reminds me so much of Claire, such a nut, but so sweet. And while they go back and forth saying the nicest things about me, I mean, it's just so humbling. I start to think about what it would be like to fly around with them all day, looking at our Earth from way up above, circling and gliding through the air with complete freedom. Sometimes I get so lost in the moment, I just start running around my yard, flapping my arms like a seagull at the beach. A lot of times I'll even start to squawk. Usually right around the third or fourth squawk is when my neighbor starts screaming at me to pipe down. He's always like, quiet down, lady, and put on some pants. And I'm always like, you put on some pants, sir, because in the heat of the moment I panic and I can't think of anything better to say. Of course, he's already wearing pants, so it doesn't pack quite the punch I wanted it to. But the bottom line is he's clearly not as connected to nature as I am. Anyway, we have a lot of different kinds of wild animals on our property. We've seen bobcats and deer and wild boars. One time Portia was convinced that she discovered a whole new species behind our house. She saw something she had never seen before that had tiny eyes and a hairy face. At first I assumed it was my cousin Nancy, but it wasn't her. Portia said it looked like a warthog, and I had to remind her we don't live on an African game reserve yet. For a long time I was pretty sure she saw a possum, but we did eventually figure out that the mystery creature she spotted was a javelina. They're normally found in desert areas like Tucson, and I don't know what it was doing in Beverly Hills. All I know is the next time I saw it, it was reading a script for the next Transformers movie and taking meetings with agents. When I'm not pondering by my pond, I'm outside gardening in my garden. That is, when I'm not lanaiing on my lanai. I love to garden. I find it very therapeutic. Actually, I treat it just like therapy. I talk to my plants about what's going on in my life, about my dreams and aspirations, my fears, my regrets, how frustrated I get when someone suddenly stops at the bottom of an escalator without realizing there's a whole line of people piling up behind them. I find it very easy to talk to my plants about pretty much everything. And the best part is, instead of having to pay a therapist hundreds of dollars an hour, my plants only charge me 60. I just read that gardening is the number one pastime in America. Well, I just wrote it anyway. Who knows if it's true? What I do know is that gardening is my favorite pastime. I have a lot of hobbies, but there's something about gardening that's different. I think it's because gardening is a hobby you can eat. You plant some seeds, you water some soil, and in just a few short months, you've got yourself enough tomatoes to make a tiny salad. There aren't a lot of hobbies you can eat. Like, let's say you love to cook. That's a bad example. Let's say you love to travel, and everywhere you go, you try the food at the best local... My point